This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Welcome to another Joy 94.9 podcast.
And we're into our second hour in focus, this second hour of Saturday Magazine. We're going to be looking at religion.
Mm-hmm.
And you've already heard from Heather Crichton, Reverend Kevin Crichton, advertising some of the upcoming events, but we also wanted to talk to you about your work as pastor at the Metropolitan Community Church and also the work around being a special outreach church to all those that feel excluded, especially gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, intersex, queer and questioning people. Hi, Heather.
Hi, how are you?
So the Metropolitan Church has been around for... forever, it seems now.
It seems like that. Actually, this year is the 40th anniversary of the Universal Fellowship of Metropolitan Community Church. It started 40 years ago, just about 9 months before the Stonewall Riots. So members of MCC actually were at Stonewall Riots as well. In Melbourne, it's been here for about 33 years. So when Reverend Troy Perry, the founder, came out to Australia, Acceptance actually sponsored him to come out. Acceptance is a Catholic support group for GLBT people. And sponsored, and the church began in most of the states in Australia fairly soon after that. So, yeah, we've been around for a while, but still seen as newbies. And a lot of people ask who we're aligned with or who did we break away with. We actually didn't break away from anyone. We are our own denomination, set up by Troy because he was kicked out of his church because he was a gay man back in the 1960s. You don't come out as a gay man, but he did. And so he was kicked out of his church where he was the pastor. And so he, after some soul-searching, decided that God wanted him to set up his own church, and he did.
Okay. So this is a question I never thought to ask before. Is it only just gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender people who are members of your church?
No, it's not. I think initially 40 years ago that was what the aim was, because that's who were looking for some spiritual place that they could call home. But over the years, our churches, we call ourselves an inclusive fellowship. And so, therefore, everybody is welcome. The majority of our people are gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender, but there are some countries in the world, South Africa is one, where MCC is totally heterosexual.
By design or just has it
just the way it was, yeah. I think. It was just that there is the majority of people who wanted a different type of worship space within their country, and the majority of those were heterosexual, so they set up the church, and there is also a gay church in...
I was going to ask
you. There is also. Interesting that. But we also have a gay church, MCC, that is predominantly gay over there as well. Yeah.
So it's interesting, and we talked about this introducing the segment a little earlier, how perhaps our mainstream churches and religious organisations, obviously over the centuries, have not been accepting of gay and lesbian lifestyle. Yet there seems to be a need for
Absolutely.
Some people to still relate to a religion, to have the capacity to pray and all of those sorts of things. What do you think that's about?
Why would you join an organisation or belong to one that doesn't like you?
Well, I think particularly people in our generation or our era, and that's around about people who are in the 50s and that, often grew up in a church, and because that's where their parents took them, or you went to Sunday school. And so you became a part of that faith community, and I think that's one of the things. You're looking for a community space. And so they grew up in those churches, and it wasn't until they came out that they realised that it's okay to be everything but gay in some of these churches. Today, it's not like that. A lot of these individual churches of every denomination actually are quite welcoming of gay and lesbian people. I think it's just the hierarchies of the denominations themselves that still struggle. And, of course, we see the Anglican Church are just about on the verge of splitting because of the question of gay ordained priests. But then again, if it wasn't the gay ordained, it would be women. So they'd still argue about something. And one of the questions is, are they really actually arguing about the gay lesbians ordained priests, or actually are they sort of arguing about women being ordained and being bishops? But we won't go in that way. But
Women are becoming bishops in Australia.
Absolutely.
We need
Absolutely.
To show this in parts of Australia anyway.
Well, that's right, yeah. So, but, I mean, people often, as I said, either grow up in a church, and it was only when they actually come to understand and acknowledge their own sexuality, not being as what the general population in that church is, that they begin to see that it's not quite the place that they want to be. Mm. Now, not all churches are like that today. As I said, there's quite a lot of affirming churches, individual churches around Melbourne. There are quite a few, and then that's when they start seeking. I think the question was about why do we? I think we're just all spiritual people. It doesn't matter whether we go to church or not. We're all seeking something in our lives. Some people seek it through a formalized or religion. And others seek it in some other form and never actually attend a church building in their whole life. But I think because we're community people, and a lot of gay and lesbian people who don't find comfort in a church often find it within community groups, mm. within social groups, within our community.
That sense of fellowship.
Absolutely, yes. And that's what we seek. We're not lone people.
And that's what communion, I suppose, is essentially about when you look what the word means. Mm. But with the Christian church, Heather, I mean, you can, you know, Shakespeare said, you know, the devil can cite scripture to his purpose. There's something both testaments that can you can make anything out of if you want to.
Yes.
And many Christian faiths and denominations can point specifically to their books and say, this is where homosexuality is condemned. What do you do when people sort of say, but in the Bible it says it's wrong?
Well, I first of all point out the Bible has been rewritten about 100 and something times, and each time you rewrite something, you will change, just automatically, not deliberately, a context or the idea of what that word was. It wasn't written in English. And it was originally written in Aramaic, and so it's been translated so many times. The word homosexuality did not actually exist until the 19th century. So any Bible you pick up and that says it's the word of God, homosexuality actually wasn't a word in the language in those days. And I often tell people, well, it's great when you look at a book that was written 2,000 years ago into the culture that was actually written in those days, and that's what you look at. The Bible is written often in culture where there was not one God. There were many gods worshipped. And these people, what God was trying to do was bring these people under one God. So therefore, a lot of rituals that were happening and a lot of practices that were happening were being condemned because you can't do those sorts of things and just worship the one God. You know, you worship other gods if you want to, but the God that we worship was someone who doesn't approve of those sorts of practices. Mm-hmm. Today, it's a little bit different. I mean, today, in our church, when we sort of speak about God, we use the terms of God, your own understanding, because we don't have a male God as such. Our terminology and our writings are all inclusive. We don't have a male God in our written or in our songs. That doesn't mean that people in the congregation doesn't have a male God. Many of them do. But some of them have a female.
So they might use the term he or
they might do it in their own minds, but when we're in public worship, we always ensure that God is
gender
asexual.
Gender neutral,
yes.
So do you use any pronoun?
We usually use God. Just use God. And I mean, there's so many words that you can use to describe God. It's just amazing. And we just limit ourselves with a he. I mean, you know, which actually just limits what God's amazingness is all about.
Well, as soon as you give anyone a gender, it starts to really narrow down what their capacity is pardon me, who they can be.
I remember the hoo-ha went just off the track a bit when Helen Reddy thanked God as a woman when she accepted, I think it was her Grammy for I Am Woman, and that caused great ripples amongst the American viewing public, referring to God,
as a woman. Yes, well, we're speaking with the Reverend Heather Crichton, who is a woman, shock horror, pastor at the Metropolitan Community Church of Melbourne. So, and, I mean, there are two issues there. One's about being a gay person or a homosexual person, being a woman and being part of religion. There's a bit of a challenge.
It's interesting. Sounds like you're at my ordination, because that's what the priest said who ordained me said that, you know.
Welcome to trouble.
Welcome to trouble. Exactly right. You got three strikes back against you. And it does, you know, it does cause a problem being a female as a part of a leader of a church. MCC for many years was predominantly male. And in Melbourne, it was certainly very male. The congregation was largely male, and in a lot of churches around the world, it still is. In MCC now, at Melbourne, we are sort of balanced male-female, which is really good, and I think part of that is being a woman in the head of the church. It upsets people. You know, some people don't want, particularly if you've grown up with not that concept of having females as leaders.
But do you think that it's the role of the church to upset people? I mean, it has been traditionally... for a lot of causes, the church has been a fairly progressive leader in a lot of things. I can go back to slavery and things. Is it your church's role to to upset people and challenge our stereotypes?
Certainly challenge. Mm. Certainly take people out of their comfort zones. Because when we get into our comfort zones, we actually don't then look at other options, and we don't actually explore what's happening within ourselves or within our community. If we just want to come to church, sit in the pew, listen to the songs, say a few prayers, take communion and then leave, where's our Christian action in that? I certainly upset a few people by some of the comments that I make. We certainly in our church advertise and support all the community things that are happening. We have a transgender service. We have a leather service. Things that sort of that's a bit challenging. Mm-hmm. But why not? We are part of the community. If you're going to be part of the community, you have to acknowledge, and whoever's sitting in the church seats may belong to those community groups as well. And if we don't acknowledge them and honour them, then we're not being an inclusive church.
That's right. We're speaking with Reverend Heather Crichton from the MCC, and if you'd like to email in with a question or a comment for Heather, you can do that on air at joy.org.au or SMS on 0427JOY94.9. Simon from Caulfield South has said they may not have had the word homosexuality, but they could still write about men lying with men as women with women and disapprove. So we'll talk about that after this track. Welcome back to Saturday Magazine with Nick and Leanne on Joy 94.9. In our In Focus segment this morning, we're talking religion.
We're
talking with Reverend Heather Crichton from the MCC.
Heather, we played I Got Jesus by Mavis Staples. But we can move on to somewhere else, because we have on the line Ali, who is the facilitator of Queer Muslims in Australia, which is a Yahoo group based in Australia for and by Muslims who are lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, intersex, questioning, queer, and curious with a Q, and wish to engage in a safe space online. Ali is not a Muslim scholar or cleric, but she set up the group so that fellow Muslims who struggle to reconcile a religion and or spirituality can find and meet other Muslims who might have similar experiences. The group is open to anyone who identifies as Muslim and or LGBTIQ and lives in Australia. Good morning, Ali.
Good morning.
Now, I think common perceptions would be that it would be very difficult to be a gay, lesbian, queer Muslim.
Well, I mean, there's no real... I can't say yes right away to that, and I can't say no to right away to that too, because, I mean, Muslims aren't one homogenous entity, and you can't just say that they're all the same. So you're going to have some Muslim families and some Muslims who do believe you can reconcile and do it quite successfully, and you'll have some people and some families who will say you can't. And I don't think that's much different from any other religion, really.
Because we were talking earlier with Crusader from Hares and Hyenas, who's been reviewing some books about Muslim countries, Muslim culture, and being gay in them. And we did make the point that it's an enormous, an international and diverse culture when we're talking Muslim. How do you define it when some ignorant nong like me says, oh, but aren't Muslims just, what's all the same?
Well, see, this is, I think, the reason why when we set up the group, we were really, really clear that we were going to talk about Muslims in Australia, because Muslims in Australia are very different to, let's say, Muslims in Canada or America or Muslims in a Muslim country. And if you look and if you unpack that further, Muslims in Australia are coming from so many different ethnicities as well, so that you've got Lebanese, Turkish, Indonesian, and even, converted Muslims. So it's very difficult to say that, all right, all Muslims are the same, because it is such a massive diaspora that's just, all over the world. So it's practically impossible to say that. It's a generalisation which just doesn't have much fact in it.
So what sort of, you've got a discussion group, basically an internet discussion group. Well, tell us a little bit more about it, because there must be some very interesting conversations and ideas flowing through that.
Well, I think the group was set up not so long ago, about three and a half, four years back. And I found that at that time that one of the reasons why I set it up was I'd been struggling with my own, trying to reconcile my faith and my sexual orientation. But I find that the reason why I went to the group was for that particular reason. And so many of the people who send emails to the list and want to join up, because it is moderated, and there are a few other moderators, have exactly the same or similar issues. They say that I'm struggling or I'm trying to reconcile or I'm tired about hearing how homophobic apparently my religion is, and I want to know, are there other people like they're at me? They have to be. So it's definitely a space that needs to be there, and just by fact, by virtue of the fact that people still seem to want to join and still want to meet other people and talk about their experiences.
And stay within the faith.
And stay within the faith. See, this is the interesting thing, because a lot of people who are there, it is very important that it doesn't matter just how strong their faith is. The fact is that the Muslim part to them is enough that they would join a group that quite clearly says queer Muslim. Now, to some people, Muslim might be a cultural thing, not necessarily a religious thing, but yet they will still, you know, have that in their tagline or identify with such. With some people, Muslim might be a spiritual thing, which they would distinguish from religion. And for others, again, it could be, no, this is my religion. And then if you go into that even further, within Islam, you have different sects. So you've got, like, Sunni Muslims and Shia Muslims. And they themselves would then be further going, well, in my sect of Islam, I believe I can do this and whatnot.
So, Matt, it's back to interpretation a little. I think that's what Heather's nodding here, Ali, to some of the things you're saying, so it sounds like she can relate to that.
Oh, absolutely. It's. I mean, the Quran, you know, being or what Muslims believe is the word of God, doesn't actually, like, you know, it's very difficult to take that book and, you know, say, all right, you know, it's been, you know, 1500 years since, and what we're going to do is we're going to place that exactly right now in 2008 and follow it to the letter of what it says there. I mean, it's talking about things like camels and goats, and you can't really translate that literally. So what you have to do is interpret, like, what does the book say? What were the practices of the prophets? Like, you know, what was done at that time? Like, how were people received? And if you come from that school of thought, then you can apply that kind of liberal interpretation, liberal in the American sense, not the Australian sense. Mm. And of course, then you will come to a place where you believe that, well, if you have faith and you believe that, you know, everything happens for a reason, well, then you will accept your sexual orientation or gender identity.
So, I guess it's the same with all the religions of the children of the book, Christians, Islam and Jewish faith. There are very fundamental and very powerful voices in the community, and they're the ones we tend to hear, and they tend to be the ones that are most negative about sexuality differences. Mm-hmm. So how do you negotiate within your own religious basis, a religious identity and a sexual identity?
Well, you can and you can't, if that makes sense, because, I mean, if you're going to meet, let's say, a bigot or a racist or a homophobe, you can only reason with them to the point that they actually want to engage. And so you might just give up and say, all right, you can yell about me not existing, but I'm right here. So, you know, keep on going, and it's just not going to make any difference. Or you can choose to concentrate your efforts in other areas, which is what I and fellow queer Muslims did. We said, all right, there are going to be people out there who hate us because we challenge them and we threaten them for their insecurities and for whatever they believe. We're going to ignore that, and we're going to concentrate on the people who do support us and find like-minded people and grow with that support and try and be as strong as possible in the face of that kind of adversity.
What sort of ramifications have you had, Ali?
Oh, look, I mean, in the last few years I've used my full name more often than not, and that was a thing that I didn't use initially because I was afraid of any censure that not myself so much, but my family could face. Mm-hmm. And, you know, my family live in another state, and I was very clear to them that I would try my best to respect them, you know, with a capital R, but I'm not going to say that it's been horrible because it hasn't, but I have had, you know, Muslims turn around and say, well, you can't be Muslim and things like that. And I've just been like, well, you know what? If you actually do identify as Muslim, then you know that you can't judge another Muslim. You can't judge anyone. You have to wait till you die and you get judged. Mm-hmm. So you know.
So the prejudice could be coming from different places and using religion perhaps as an excuse or a vehicle for that.
Absolutely. So I've kind of gotten a bit more thick-skinned, as you probably have to be, if you're going to put yourself out there and say that you're queer and you're Muslim, because that's going to happen. I mean, my own family initially were very much like, all right, we accept that you're, you know, you're queer and we're not particularly happy about that, but we're going to accept that, but we're not going to accept the Muslim part as well. Now, in 4 years since I've been saying I'm queer Muslim, my parents have done a complete 360-degree turn, and they recently came down and stayed in my house with my partner, which is a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
And my mother actually had come down once before, a few months ago, and she told my sister, who then came back to me — I love the way this all works — but my sister came back to me and said, my mother said to her, after seeing the way Ali lives with her partner in their life, I've decided that I think this is God's choice for her.
Oh, that's great.
Wow,
I think
that's great.
All our listeners will probably get that mother said to my sister said to me routine. Can I just ask a quick question, because we'll go to a little break in a second. Ali, has this made you I was about to say a better Muslim, but maybe a more thorough Muslim, or have you learnt more than you think you might have otherwise?
Well, that's a really, really good question, because I know in some ways I've become a lot more lax. I've stopped with most of the rituals, and I've moved away from some things that I really used to do a lot when I was 12, 13, 14, 15, and so on. But I have actually gone and read more in terms of theory, in terms of interpretation, jurisprudence. Like, you're absolutely right there, because I do get questions and I can't answer them, and I don't want to answer questions that I haven't read up on. So I have to be able to say, well, I've read about three different schools of thought who've said three different things, like the abortion debate, which is absolutely huge. And even within Islam, there are so many different approaches to abortion. So yes. I wanted to go and read up, well, what does it say about that?
Well, Ali, I wish we had lots more time to talk about this, and perhaps we just come back to it a bit further time down the track, but we will say goodbye, and thank you very much for joining us on our discussion about, well, being queer in a religious context. And we've been speaking with Ali, who's the facilitator of Queer Muslims in Australia, and very soon we'll be talking with Yaakov, who is a gay man from the progressive Jewish community, and we have in the studio the Reverend Heather Crichton from the Melbourne Metropolitan Church.
This is Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9. Welcome back to Saturday Magazine. You're with Nick and Leanne, and we have Reverend Heather Crichton from MCC in with us. And this morning we're talking religion.
We are, and just a little while ago we were talking with Ali from Queer Muslims in Australia. And on the line we have Yaakov, who is a gay man from the progressive Jewish community. And because today is a Sabbath, speaking on radio is not ideal for a member of the Jewish community. But because of the importance and educational benefits, Yaakov and his rabbi feel it's permissible in this instance. And good morning, Yaakov, and thank you very much for joining us.
Hi, good morning, and Shabbat Shalom. That's the greeting for the Sabbath. So.
Salam. It's Heather here.
Shalom Aleichem. Thank you very much indeed. Now, is it being gay and Jewish, you know, there's lots of traditional jokes, et cetera, but what is the issue for, and what are you talking about when you're saying progressive Jewish? Because just to rabbit on a little bit more, Yaakov, we're learning that you can't say there's just one sort of Christian or one sort of Muslim.
Yes, well, that's right. It's the same case for Judaism. As you may probably know, Judaism is the religious culture of the Jewish people. So a Jew is someone who is born a Jew or chooses to become a Jew through conversion. And especially in the case of people who are born Jewish, they may not necessarily identify with the religious aspect of being Jewish. So they may consider themselves secular or cultural Jews. In terms of progressive Judaism, it's a strand of Judaism that is different from what we'd call traditional or classical Judaism, or Orthodox Judaism, I should say, which basically developed from the early 19th century in Germany as a response to modernity. And I suppose the core values of progressive Judaism is the understanding that all things, including our beliefs, values, and traditions, develop or progress through time. And therefore we take into consideration not only our tradition, but also contemporary realities.
So it's your location within history and with culture now, and I think it's a point that both Heather and Ali strongly made when we were speaking with them. So in terms of contemporary Jewish culture, and this is generalised now, Yaakov, what does it mean to be a gay or lesbian person?
It really depends where you are within the community. Within Orthodoxy, you'd probably have a difficult time, simply because it is still very traditionally minded. Although there is some progress in that area, recently an Orthodox gay rabbi came out. His name is Rabbi Steven Greenberg, and he actually wrote a book about traditional Judaism and homosexuality. And there was also a film that was recently released called Trembling Before God, which documents the lives of Orthodox and Hasidic gay and lesbian Jews and their struggle with reconciling their sexuality with their religion. Or religious practices, I should say.
How was that received, but, Yaakov?
It was actually received quite well by the modern Orthodox community. And in fact, there were a lot of Orthodox congregations that showed screenings of this documentary in their synagogues. So there is some progress within Orthodoxy, albeit slow. The more positive side comes from the more progressive, liberal sections of the community, which I belong to, which basically, generally speaking, would be very welcoming of gays and lesbians in terms of their participation within not only just the cultural life, but also the religious life of the community. So, for example, in the progressive movement, generally speaking, men and women, regardless of their sexual orientation, can become rabbis and can also have their relationships blessed or sanctified through appropriate Jewish ritual.
Is there, and what's an appropriate Jewish ritual for same-sex sanctification?
Well, that's why I was very careful with my words, because at the moment, to my knowledge, there's no rabbinical body, even within the progressive movement, that uses the term kedusha, which is equivalent to the English word marriage. Mm-hmm. But it does recognize that there is a holiness within same-sex relationships, and therefore the symbols of Jewish weddings, so, for example, the wedding canopy and, let's say, breaking the glass after the ceremony, are employed, but I suppose the text of the service and what the actual ceremony is called is still quite restrained in a way that it doesn't employ the terms marriage or kedusha, as I mentioned earlier on.
I'm just going to ask Heather, do you conduct same-sex sanctification rituals in your church?
Absolutely. That was one of the many things that MCC has been doing for the last 40 years. We call them holy unions or commitment ceremonies or blessings, whatever the couple want to call them. I think we get stuck again in what tradition says they should be called. So it sounds like in the Jewish faith, the same as with ours, we try to make it as what the couple actually want. And we actually use the term marriage within in our rites of the church, but marriage is a word that, you know, has caused so much controversy lately. My partner and I went through a holy union ourselves.
Yep. I vaguely remember Dr. Karen Phelps and her partner had a Jewish ceremony in New York.
Yes.
And it looked traditional, I guess, in the sense, but obviously, Yaakov, what you're saying wasn't necessarily in the eyes of the faith. It was, it's still not a union between a man and a woman as in marriage or kedusha.
Again, it's a bit hard to say. It all depends who you're talking to, who's involved. There are obviously people within the movement, especially in the rabbinical body, who do support the idea of total equality, meaning that the relationship of a heterosexual couple or a homosexual couple could be called and classified as marriage. But then the general consensus at the moment is that it is a different kind of relationship, but nevertheless it is sanctifiable. It is something which is pleasing before God's eyes, so to speak.
Now, it's a question I didn't get around to asking Ali, but I would ask of you, Yaakov. In some senses, marriage, having children, is that part of your cultural expectations? We all grow up in most of us grow up in a religious church household, I guess, and most of us grow up in a heterosexual household. But we become something else and we have to meet those expectations. What are the ones that you've had to meet?
Marriage and children and the whole domestic structure is something that's very fundamental to Judaism. In fact, a lot of commentators and theologians have mentioned that, have actually said that Judaism is a domestic religion. It's one that actually is celebrated and preserved mainly in the home rather than the synagogue as anything. So therefore, there is, I suppose, a pressure on families and on individuals to perpetuate I suppose a traditional understanding of Jewish life by getting married and having children and establishing a Jewish home. I'm happy with that model. I'm not saying that it's for everyone, but personally that's a goal for myself, to eventually settle down and get married. And hopefully by the time I do, they will call it a marriage, and have children and establish a Jewish home. That's a personal goal. But for other people, I'm not too sure how they would go about that. And what I mean by other people, I obviously mean gays or lesbian Jewish people, how they would reconcile that.
And how well, I was going to say well organized, I suppose it's a reasonable expression, how well organized are gay and lesbian people within the progressive Jewish community or within Jewish communities as a whole?
Well, for example, in Melbourne we have Aleph, which is gay and lesbian Jewish social group. So I suppose it's quite similar to other ethnic or cultural groups within Melbourne. And also the Victorian Union for Progressive Judaism has recently, earlier this year, the rabbinical body actually issued a statement saying their willingness to conduct same-sex ceremonies. So we see that within the progressive movement, at least here in Melbourne, there's a real sense of being welcome. And on a global sense, there are many congregations very similar to the MCC, the Metropolitan Christian Churches, which are basically like gay and lesbian synagogues, exclusively gay and lesbian synagogues. So, and also in Israel, for example, it's a very inclusive place whereby gays and lesbians are allowed to serve in the army, and you know, there are annual pride marches in Tel Aviv and Jerusalem. So overall, I mean, it's not an oppressive community, so to speak.
Yes. Well, Yaakov, thank you very much. We'll say goodbye to you, but I just want, and winding up there, we've had some very good news, I think, from all three of our guests, that despite the loud noises of fundamentalism from every quarter, outside the religions of the book included, there's some really positive things happening, and it's been great that you've been able to help us learn a bit more about what's happening within the Jewish community. So thanks very much for joining us today, Yaakov.
You're welcome. It's my pleasure.
Thank you. You're listening to Saturday Magazine on Joy 94.9. Our In Focus segment was on religion, and as we would guess, it's raised quite a few messages from our listeners. Some to you, Heather, Darren wrote in and just said he wanted to say it was great that you could provide a place for a gay man like him to worship and feel wanted. So,
thank you.
And we've also had other comments saying, well, perhaps we should look at where our dollars are going, and perhaps funding the building of temples is not helping the homeless people in the street. So as we knew, it would be a controversial issue, but we've also had a message saying it's a common theme from all three guests that the only way to reconcile homosexuality with religion is to break with tradition and old text. True religion stays anti-gay.
Well, I think old religion may, but I think that Heather made the point that religion's always evolving. Heather, thank you very much for joining us this morning. I'm going to say farewell to you, Leanne. Thanks very much for helming the show, as they say, and I look forward to seeing you next time I'm on Saturday Magazine.
Thank you very much, Nick. Thank you, Heather. Now, you've got a couple of events that we'll just remind people about tonight.
Well, yes, tonight we have the Stonewall Dinner, which starts at 7 o'clock. If anyone wants to come and have a good feed for $20 and we'll see a couple of videos. Tomorrow night is our Stonewall Service with the Gay and Lesbian Chorus and Demetra from the Gay and Lesbian Rights Lobby. And in July, we have the Trivia Night on the 28th of July, and then the 26th of July, and then we have our Spring Ball on the September the 6th. So all of it's on our website if they want to go there for our fundraising.
That's terrific. Thank you, Heather.
You're most welcome.
Thank you to our other guests that phoned in. Thank you to Cam and Chris on support and Penn and Anthony for the news. That's it for Saturday Magazine this week on Joy 94.9.
This has been another Joy 94.9 podcast. Joy 94.9 is a gay and lesbian volunteer-based community radio station committed to providing a voice for the diverse GLBTI communities. You can support our work by becoming a member or making a donation. For details, go to joy.org.au.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.